Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome to this seminar. I hope you found your way to the one that you are wanting to come to. This is a seminar on women pioneers and planters. My name is Joanna, and it's a joy to be able to welcome you to this seminar this afternoon. What a rich feast we have already had today. Just a few practicalities. We are going to be recording this session. But just the speaker and the panelists and myself will be on view in that recording. And we do hope that you'll join in and post a question. But don't worry, those questions won't be kind of visible on the recording either. If you want to ask a question, then do put it in the question box. We would love to take those questions. And if you want to make a comment or you want to point people to a resource that you found on this issue really helpful, then do put that in the chat. So put resources in the chat and questions in the questions box. What we're going to do this afternoon is that in a minute, I'm going to hand over to our speaker who's going to share with us for about 15 minutes. And then I will turn to each of our panelists who are going to kind of give an initial reaction to Sarah's talk, and then we will launch into some questions and conversation. We'll try to get through as much as we can within the short time that we have. So thank you for being with us. We are thrilled this afternoon that we are joined by Sarah McDonald Hayden, who is a leader of Cheltenham Network Church, and she's going to be sharing with us, and each of them will tell you a little bit more about their context when they speak. But we're also delighted that Bishop Jill has joined us from the wonderful land of Lancaster. And so Bishop Jill will share with us later. And Andrea, who is a pioneer network developer down working for the Church Mission Society and has many, many different strings to her bow, which she will share with us in a few moments. So without further ado, I want to hand over to Sarah. Sarah, thank you for being with us. We look forward to what you're going to share with us.
Great, thank you so much, Joanna. Well, it's lovely to be with you all this morning. I hope you can see my PowerPoint. Great. So as Joanna mentioned, my name is Sarah McDonald Hayden. I'm leader of Cheltenham Network Church, which is a bishop's mission order in Gloucester Diocese. But I just finished a doctorate looking at best practice in identifying and mentoring potential female church leaders from within the HGB network. So I kind of bring those two slightly different hats today. I wanted to start by talking about the God who sees me. In the book of Genesis, in chapter 16, Hagar, a servant of Abraham and Sarah, pregnant and in the midst of an extremely complicated family situation, escapes into the wilderness, helpless, alone and afraid. There she has an encounter with the angel of the Lord, who meets her in the desert, speaks to her situation, and of whom she says this in Genesis 16, verse 13. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she says, I have now seen the one who sees me. Thousands of years later, another woman with a complicated life, uninvited to a dinner party hosted by a man with systematic authority, meets with Jesus and washes his feet with her hair. This is what Jesus says about her. He turned towards the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I have entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oils on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little. Do you see this woman? At the tomb of Jesus in John chapter 20, Mary Magdalene is approached by the risen Lord, though she doesn't recognize him, who asks her, woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for? Thinking he was the gardener, she says, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus says to her, "Mary." She turns to him and cries out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. God sees women and calls them by name. Scripture cannot help but be littered by accounts of the living God acknowledging and highlighting the role of women in the story. And yet we know that women are underrepresented in some areas of church planting. For example, planting resourcing churches, leading large planting churches, and yet are well represented in others, in some areas of pioneering and often in unpaid work in fresh expressions of church. Why is that? Well, we're going to talk about that for a few moments. We're going to talk about some research that has been done in the areas of women and church planting. I'm going to share a few unofficial hypotheses I have about why that might be, and I hope then we'll discuss both because they do kind of overlap. But I want to start with a principle that I personally find very liberating in thinking about this topic, and it's this. Most systems are designed with a particular person in mind when they are created. When people don't fit into that particular system, we can sometimes encounter structural issues. Now, I'm ordained in the Anglican Church. I love being part of the Anglican Church, but I'm well aware sometimes when I encounter situations as a woman that I'm part of a church which it's just over, you know, we're over 25 years that women have been ordained. I think liberation can occur when we're able freely and openly and undefendedly to acknowledge the reality that sometimes systems were not originally designed for women. So, in particular, thinking about church planting today, what are some challenges that women can face as planters? I want to introduce you to the Reverend Dr. Carolyn Moore. She is a United Methodist church planter in the US. She's a church planter herself, but she, in about 2017, did some research looking in the US at challenges, particularly for female church planters. And she highlights a whole load of stuff. But she highlights these kind of five particular areas that can create specifically some challenges for female church planters. She talks about theological challenges that women can sometimes face. And she says about 50% of the global church would affirm the ministry of women and 50% are kind of would be on a journey with that. And so in the West, that can influence us when we think about planting. She talks about cultural attitudes that can be an issue for women. The classic double bind, that, you know, girls are often called bossy, but we don't have an equivalent male name. The double bind of not being seen as gentle in case you're not assertive enough, but if you're assertive, you might be seen as aggressive. She talks about women struggling with longevity in church planting, perhaps entering church planting at one particular life stage, but then finding it kind of unsustainable for various reasons. She talks about some of her participants say things like changing family dynamics can make it more challenging to plant, particularly on that entrepreneurial edge. It is the reality often that women are still primarily carers for children or for elderly relatives. And she talks about how denominationally, certainly in the Methodist Church, that the lack of family-friendly policies and flexible working can make it kind of challenging for women as they try and lead and adapt to those at the same time. It's interesting, I think, all the research that's come out of COVID on flexible working and how actually women have been really disproportionately affected by that in some areas. She talks about the Billy Graham rule and just the whole area, messy, complicated area of mixed gender mentoring and how those dynamics work out. And sometimes that can disproportionately impact women, particularly in areas of mentoring and fellowship and training. And I think most interestingly, she talked about the fact that in the United Methodist Church in the States, women were more likely to be what she terms parachute planters than planting from a large church. So what she describes as a parachute planter is someone who goes in often on their own with some funding or very limited funding, maybe just with herself and her household, but not necessarily going, say, from a large church with a team, and how actually there are interesting different dynamics that are created when you're doing that. You know, we can discuss whether or not that's more challenging later, but she says, you know, that can be a challenge for women. So my research looked more particularly at identifying and mentoring women, and it found that women universally had to be proactively identified for church leadership. So every single woman I interviewed for my research had been approached at least once, most people multiple times, to consider church leadership. It also found that two-thirds of the women, and these are women in training for church leadership in a network of planting churches, would articulate they were not being mentored towards church planting as part of their leadership. And a very small number of those women were being mentored by senior church leaders. Now that could be argued to create challenges for a leadership pipeline, because we're not training the women that are in our kind of structures. And interestingly, it's challenging to reflect that we can have a kind of an institutional structure, but sometimes the kind of day-to-day mentoring and training can slip through the gaps there. What I would want to say, though, is that women in leadership is not a unique issue to the church. We know that in business and in lots of areas, women are underrepresented, particularly in those senior leadership roles. I was looking up the FTSE 100 in the UK, and it says that 7% of women companies in the FTSE 100 are being led by women, which literally just means 7 organisations are being led by women out of 100. If you go to the FTSE 250s, the biggest companies, that's only 5% being led by women. So it's not a unique issue to the church. I think there's a good challenge for us actually to say, okay, well, this is not just a church issue. It's not a theological issue. There is a cultural issue in our country around women in leadership. What can we learn from each other? Now, there's a good question and a good challenge for us, the church, in that should we be better maybe than business and secular, you know, or should it look different? What can we offer to that challenge? But it's not unique. I was also interested to find out that women are more likely to run part-time and small businesses alongside other things than they are to kind of run large companies. And if you often look at companies that are headed up by female CEOs, they often start at a very grassroots level, which is interesting. Another hypothesis I really wanted to talk about today is the glass cliff. So you may have heard about the glass ceiling, the kind of level that women can attain to, but the glass cliff is a new phenomenon. And it's the phenomenon of women in leadership roles, such as executives in the corporate world and female political election candidates, being more likely than men to achieve leadership roles during periods of crisis or downturn, where the chance of failure is the highest. Often, women then, as they're appointed to those leadership roles, turn the situation around. And there's a lot of debate about, well, why is this that women are often appointed to positions of leadership which are really high risk and high stakes? Well, one vice president who was in a glass cliff post says this. She says women are much more willing to take on low success probability situations because they feel maybe they're uniquely equipped to make a difference. There is a certain profile of person who is less concerned with what a challenge might mean for them personally if it were to fail. Now, my hypothesis is this is actually true in church planting and pioneering as well. I have observed, and this is not data, so this is my observation, that women often in this country who are plant and pioneer are doing those parachute plants. They're often planting into urban priority areas and estates. They're often doing it unpaid or part-time. They're often taking on complicated church grafts that involve kind of really good extra-personal, intrapersonal skills. And I think there's a really valid question as to whether that's right and fair, that is often the type of planting that women does. And I think we should be asking those questions. But in my opinion and my sense is that God is using that at the moment. In other words, was Mary at the tomb the original glass cliff? Mary at the foot of the cross of Jesus, when the disciples go and hide in the upper room, she goes to that tomb 3 days after, thinking it is game over. And because she is there, she meets with the living God. And because she is there, she is commissioned, Pope Francis calls her the apostle to the apostles, to go out and to share that news of Jesus. Because she shows up when the failure risk is almost certain, she is given opportunities to see the work of God. Is the glass cliff a barrier, or is it an opportunity for women to step into places that maybe other people are frightened to go? So, what will you do? I have some questions, and it depends on who you are. So if you're a leader here today because you're passionate about encouraging women and equipping women, do you know and are you addressing challenges in your context that disproportionately impact women? Whether that's in your denominational leadership, your structural leadership, or in your church leadership. Do you know what those challenges are for the women around you? And if you don't, I would suggest asking the women around you, because they will be different. How are you mentoring female leaders? If we know that a lot of women who are being trained are not being mentored, how are you engaging and training the women in your context? If you're a female planter or pioneer, do you know that God sees you now? How might telling your story, even if it's messy and complicated at times, empower and enable other people as well? And if you're the called, what is the one thing you might do after this conference to move things forward? The research suggests that women are not good at stepping forward and taking those next steps. And yet, I think that so often we're waiting for someone to tap us on the shoulder and kind of give us a big box of the right answers so we can step into them. But actually, my sense is that for some of us, we need to be being more proactive and taking opportunities ourselves in an honouring and, you know, permission giving environment. But actually, let's get ourselves into the right places. I find emailing my bishop quite scary still, and I'm an incumbent. And I think we just have to sometimes get over ourselves a bit and ask those questions. I can only speak from my own experience, but I've actually had a very positive experience as a church planter on the whole, in the network, in HTV network where I've worked, but also in the different dioceses I've been in. I felt very supported and enabled. But I have to be honest that there was a point about 2 years ago where I was in the middle of a life transition. I was associate vicar of a church, and I was doing a fresh expression of church alongside that, and I felt called to step into more senior leadership. But at the same time, I was about to get married and thinking about like the next 10 years of my life and what it would look like to have children. And I was in the process of this doctoral research, which said that women often take a step back when they step into family life. And I so almost just went, no, I can't lead a church, because I can't see how this will work, and there's no infrastructure, and I can't find maternity policies on the Church of England website. That is improved, by the way, but I couldn't at the time. And my husband, who was proofreading my essay, said, you know that you're doing all the things that your research says the women do. And sometimes you have to, instead of stepping out of the game, you have to stay in the game and hope and pray and ask the game to change. And I do think for some of us as women, we are called to be people who ask the game to change. We are going to be people who are called to liberate the systems that sometimes are not created to oppress us, but can cause us barriers. And I do just want to say to anyone, if you're in that position at the moment, it is so much easier to take yourself out of the game before raising the questions with those around you. And if we keep doing that, things won't change. But if we keep showing up and following God's call, we will see change. And it might be eating an elephant in bites, but it is, and I do believe it is happening. So thank you everyone for listening. I'm going to hand back to Joanne.
Brilliant. Thank you, Sarah, so much. What a lot you managed to pack in to those 15 minutes.
Yeah, caught quite fast.
That was fantastic. In a moment, I'm going to hand over to Bishop Jill for her first reaction, and then to Andrea, and then we'll have chance for some questions. So do you be putting those into the question box? And if you see a question that's there that you thought, that's what I wanted to ask, then do like it, because that upvotes it. And then we'll make sure that we get to those questions. So Bishop Jill, who has stayed in the game and who is doing the role, it'd be great to hear from you, your initial reactions to all that Sarah's just shared with us.
Oh, I loved what Sarah had to say. And just, but first of all, please don't ever be afraid to email bishops. We love hearing from you and we love the idea. But I do notice there is a gender difference in who approaches me. So you warned on that. Sarah, I love the sense of this the glass cliff. I thought that was really helpful. And I think connecting it with Mary, that she was, I think, like, for me, glass cliffs are opportunities. And I noticed that Mary stayed with the pain. And I think, whereas Peter and John had this displacement activity, they got on with their jobs, didn't they? And I think there is some advantage of women do have a tendency more to stay with the pain, stay with the mess. And so when I look through history, actually, women have often been on the forefront of the work of the Spirit. Women have often been the ones who cross boundaries. So although I know we're talking about a kind of a system that is slightly more gender biased in some ways, women have an incredible track record of causing the revolutions, shifting the culture. When you look particularly in of high moments of faith in our nation, it's actually a lot of women mystics who could hear that, almost feel the heart of God more keenly. So a big raft of women there. So game changes, yes. And just one thing on I thought I think about family life, because it's an interesting thing. On the other side of family life, my son turned 16 recently, so not that I'm an expert, but I spent a lot of my time working part-time. And actually for me, being a mum has been almost like the best ever analogy of church planting. So the idea that, like Mary, you're saying yes to something that's formed within you, that you don't know what he looks like or she looks like, and you're almost creating a space. And the pain of labour, that sort of helping children grow up, being a mum is the best thing not on my CV. And actually, I hear the sense of family-friendly policies, but actually, for me, it's been a real spiritual well for planting. It's put me in a hidden place through a lot of my 30s, which, as you say, is often the time when women in business make their steps in the career. I was like, chasing toddlers and changing nappies. But the interesting thing is that in the hidden place spiritually is a very fruitful time. And I think some of the fact that you mentioned about women in glass cliff situations don't mind failure, shifting, taking on high risk issues, you know, I didn't have much, there wasn't far for me to fall. I've been on the floor with toddlers, so it does make some of those shifts easier. So I could talk forever, but thank you so much for getting us talking, Sarah.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Now over to Andrea. Andrea, tell us just a little bit about some of the work that you've been involved in, because you are kind of doing a multiple of things at this moment in time, and then kind of your reaction to what Sarah's shared.
Yeah, I mean, my experience has been quite different. So I'm not ordained. I'm a lay pioneer in Southwark Diocese. I've been pioneering for 16 years, largely unpaid, voluntarily, although I am supported by the Church Mission Society as a mission partner, as well as being employed part-time to train and network pioneers that are coming through our training programme. My primary work is to people who would describe themselves as spiritual but not religious. So I started off going into New Age type fairs and offering to pray with people. And then about 8 years ago, the project that I was working on became a fresh expression of church. So I run Sacred Space Kingston, which is a fresh expression which has come out of that mission work to spiritual seekers. I suppose one of the things that really spoke to me about what Sarah said was about this being seen, because I think a lot of the time women are quite invisible. And I've just been reflecting on the Bible reading for the weekend, which is about the woman with hemorrhaging. And it's interesting that in that scripture, both of the women, so that woman and also Jairus's daughter, they're not named, they're not given their own name. They are either associated with a man or they're not even mentioned in terms of their name. So I think, you know, this radical ministry of Jesus, which both saw women but also named women, is something that we're still grappling with in the church, in my opinion. And I think as women who've been brought up in the church, there is this unspoken expectation that you will stay quiet and you will wait to be invited to speak or to lead. Whereas there doesn't seem to be the same expectation with men who would be willing to put themselves forward. And I think one of the other areas that I've been investigating is the area of shame and how that affects the way that we do mission. But I think also as women, you know, we've been in situations where we've been shamed and we've been silenced. And so therefore, again, it's very difficult to kind of step up and say, actually, I'm here, I'm doing this stuff, God has called me. And like you say, not to be bossy or pushy or any of these words that get associated with women taking the initiative. And that's what pioneering is. Pioneering is about starting new things. And I guess, you know, I also identified with the glass cliff because the kind of work that I did was amongst people that no one else in the church really wanted to go to. So, so I was kind of out on a limb doing my thing. And I was thinking also about how, you know, as Bishop Jill was saying, that a lot of what we do as women actually makes us incredibly good and natural pioneers. You know, there is this sense of us having to be creative, having to think around problems rather than just kind of bulldoze our way through. You know, quite often you have to, when you're multitasking, when you're running a home, when you're dealing with your kids, you're having to come up with creative solutions for problems. And I think that ideally equips you to be a pioneer. Also, women tend to be more relational. I mean, that's not always the case, but I think a lot of pioneering comes out of relationships and a lot of mission comes out of relationships. So again, I think that women are ideally placed to build new ecclesial communities amongst people who don't yet know Christ. And our experience at the Church Mission Society is actually we get more women than men who come to us to be trained. And I think part of that is the flexibility of the training that we offer, that it's modular, it's part time. But I think also, you know, women are encouraged to see other women who are pioneering. That's the other thing, isn't it? When you see other women taking platforms and writing research and being invited to speak from their own practice, then it encourages other women to step up and feel like there might be a place for them. And maybe the God who sees them is the God who will also make a way for them.
Brilliant. Thank you, Andrea, ever so much for that. One of the questions that has come through, kind of comment really, has been about the fact that, yes, there are opportunities in the glass cliff, but there's also injustices out there in terms of pay gap and under-resourcing. And the question really is, it shouldn't be our role to carry the burden of this on our own, should it? How would you respond to that, Sarah?
100%, absolutely. So my attitude, I will work with anyone who wants to change anything. So I think it's a both and, because I think that we need to be, you know, in appropriate environments and settings that actually change things, working to raise those questions and to change things. And like, I'm absolutely for that. I think the danger sometimes is liberating ourselves from not that restricting us stepping forward. And I think it is both. And, you know, I was chatting to a friend of mine who's a church planter, a male church planter, and he was saying about this, and he was like, but surely we all need to be more like the women stepping onto the glass cliffs rather than. So I think there's a bit of a dynamic to that. But I absolutely think speaking truth to power is important in this. But I think that the danger is sometimes we enable that to entrap us in a way that stops us actually doing the stuff. So for me, it's both and.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to add anything, either Andrea or Bishop Jill? Not on that one. I think a number of questions coming through about that. How do we get away from the stereotypes? You know, the stereotypes of the minute we start to talk about kind of women and pioneering or planting, or, you know, how do we kind of get past those to focus on the gospel? Bishop Jill, I'll hand that one to you first.
That's a great question. We carry the gospel in ourselves, don't we? It's John the Baptist's day today, and he was so full of the gospel that, you know, when he comes onto the stage, even as a messenger, he's just so full of Jesus that there isn't a sort of, he's in that. So I kind of hear a little bit what the question's about, but also, as we more die to ourselves, as we more die to, you know, we follow Jesus to be crucified, he lives more and more in us. And so there's not such a thing as a stereotype in my mind when it comes to the gospel, because we are all uniquely our different colours. And Catherine of Siena, one of my favourite mystics, said, you know, be who God called you to be and you'll set the world on fire. That by being fully ourselves, you know, if Jesus was fully man and fully God, the more filled with God's spirit you are, the more yourself you will be, ironically, yourself in an increasingly redeemed way, not in the introspective looking at your stomach to be put in way, but break stereotypes. I mean, yeah, I just move on. I think the spirit, he crosses boundaries all the time. Stereotypes is a let's move on from that, and let's not even dignify it with a thing.
just
move on.
And I guess moving on from that, there's a sense in which somebody's asked, what advice do you have for getting the balance right between being powerful creations of God and also being able to kind of deal with being put in our place? Interesting question. There's something also about that, you know, how do you do that thing of kind of making your voice heard, but not in a way that people find difficult? Do you know what I mean? Sarah?
I think...
jump in while Sarah's...
Yeah, go what do I think, Jill?
I've got a bit of a rah on this one.
Brilliant.
Okay. People want to put you in the place. Some people want to, say you're the most amazing person since sliced bread. For me, Luke 4 is the key passage here. You know, Jesus preaches in the synagogue. Some people think he's, amazing. Some people want to kill him. And he just goes... he just keeps on going through the crowd. And so it's like, don't be worried about people who want to put you in the place. Don't be worried about people who think you're the best thing since sliced bread. Just keep going. Just keep following Jesus. Mary said, you know, just do whatever he tells you. Just do whatever he tells you. Don't bother. People will always try and put you in your place. People will always think over egg you and tell you're amazing. Forget about them. Keep going. That's my answer.
So I think completely. And I think also it's really good to understand that everyone will have their own stuff about gender. And, you know, for whatever reasons, some people have really big issues with strong women. Some people have challenges with stronger men. As a woman, I think you need to figure out your own stuff on this, actually. And if you need to do that with a professional, do that. Figure out your own stuff on gender, where, you know, actually, and how you cope with that. And then don't worry too much about other people. Really on that, I think but it's worth owning your own stuff and your own relationships to that, because I think that it can manifest in lots of different ways. But if you've dealt with a lot of sexism growing up or experiences in your past, there's a really dangerous thing about, you know, if you're called to pastor and love people, not putting your own stuff onto them if they make an off the cuff comment that upsets you. Actually, it's absolutely not saying that what they said is right, but I think that you need to find a place to deal with that that isn't your leadership.
Great, thank you. Andrea, did you want to add anything in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, a lot of the time, the way that I've dealt with what's going on around me is to just do my thing and just resist any stereotypes. I mean, I think there's also an issue around how leadership is recognised. And I feel that my leadership isn't necessarily recognised because I don't lead like a man. But I've never compromised that because I don't want to. I want to be authentic to myself and lead the way that I deal with people, which is much more about coming alongside, encouraging, releasing that gift in other people, building them up and seeing them really flourish into all that God has made them to be. I don't necessarily have to stand up the front to do that. I don't necessarily have to point people to me. The whole thing about leadership is presenting those people who you're responsible for maturing Christ, and that is my responsibility before God. So I think a lot of the time it's about just doing it, and then I've wasted a lot of time in the past trying to explain to people what I wanted to do and then trying to deal with their criticisms, whereas actually when I went ahead and did it and then I pointed it out, then people kind of were like, oh, that's what you wanted to do, oh, it's not as bad as we thought. And so often, you know, actually just doing it and being seen for your fruit and what you model, I think is the most powerful kind of testimony for people who might either build you up or seek to tear you down.
Thank you. There's a number of questions about, I guess, resources to help women In terms of kind of accessing good mentors or accessing ways for kind of upskilling as people want to step into church planters, either as kind of lay or ordained. From your experiences, what have been some of the kind of helpful resources that either you've accessed or that you would recommend to others at this point in time? Sarah, do you want to?
I guess I can speak from an ordination perspective more. I was 23 when I started training, and I became a Christian 4 years before, so I didn't have a lot of experience. I really benefited from being in a context where I got to fail a lot. And I think finding, certainly if you're training as a woman, or just in general, I think it's true anyway, being in a context, making sure you're in places where you're going to get to use your voice, and in an authorized and supportive way. So for me, like being in a church where I could preach once a month and lead and be at the front and do that as an ordinand was incredibly valuable. And I think if you're someone who that's an issue for, I would really strongly think about making sure you get put in environments where you just get pushed off the bridge a bit to do it, because the more you do it, I think the easier it is to. I think I'm a big fan of the like learning in context of doing whatever type of training that is, but find a place where people are happy to release you and equip you and let you have a go.
Yeah, and that freedom to fail in, you know, whatever that might look like, you know, that freedom to have a go. Yeah. And Bishop Jill, if you're still on mute at this moment in time.
That's probably a good point, isn't it? Can I just take the question a slightly different way as well, actually, because a quick answer then taking it on a bit is in terms of resourcing and coaching, I know this may sound like a bit naive, but actually Jesus is absolutely the best coach. He knows you, he knows your situation, he knows the people, and so actually in a secret place you might be surprised how much he wants to coach you. When I was asked to be a bishop, I kind of got all the bishop books out and read them all. And then I finally said to Jesus, could you coach me about this? Because I don't really know what I'm doing. And there weren't very many good bishop books. And that is, it is, I sense like he said, well, I thought you'd never ask, you know. So on that, and I think just bouncing off that as well, and just to pick up that, just the end of that stereotype question about people commenting a lot about what women wear and how you fit in and all those sorts of things, that is apparently standard cultural issues for women in the 19th century. When they were in new roles, the main thing people commented on was what they wore. If you ask what the complaints have been about Bishop Jill in Lancaster, they've been about what I wear. And for me, that's quite important to push through some of those stereotypes. And it's just, unfortunately, it's quite common that people would comment on women's bodies in a way that would not be gendered acceptable. So just keep going, really.
Yeah, just keep going. In a moment, I'm going to give you each 1 minute. If there was one thing that you would say to encourage those who have participated this afternoon in terms of this whole area, whether they are women who are pioneering or they are men who are with us who want to encourage women pioneering, what would you say as your one thing? You've got 1 minute. Who wants to go first? Go, Sarah.
Whether you are a leader, whether you are called yourself or whether you're not, it's encourage other people the way you would like to be encouraged. I think for me, it's completely with women about if you're a woman in particular, like there's a funny TikTok thing about women not competing anymore. But actually, I think that's really important. The more we can empower and encourage each other, the healthier environment and context we're going to create. And it's so encouraging. There are so many more women doing stuff now. And I would just love us to be known for the way that we actually encourage and like compel and, you know, push each other on.
Brilliant. Thank you. Andrea.
Yeah, I think for me, having a community that you're a part of where people are supportive, encouraging, they've got your back. When you're feeling down, they're there to build you back up again. I think, you know, the fastest thing that kills pioneers is that sense of being isolated. So I think, yeah, find your community and invest time with people who are good for you.
Brilliant. Thank you. Bishop Jill.
One of the biggest effects of the fall on women was the desire to be liked. Your desire will be for your man and he will rule over you. And just watch that desire to be liked and almost act in the opposite direction. That's an Ignatian discipline, to act in the opposite direction and act with great courage. That will be my sense. So when you look at church planting movements around the world, whether it's led by women or men or whatever, the biggest factor in church growth is courage. And my favourite definition of church in the New Testament is Hebrews 3 verse 6. It says, we are God's house if we hold on to our courage. So that will be my biggest thing. It's hashtag courage.
Brilliant. We are out of time. We could carry on this conversation for so long, but I just want to say a huge thank you on behalf of everybody for your insight and your wisdom and your time this afternoon. Thank you to Sarah and Jill and Andrea. We are really grateful. Thank you for all that you've shared. And the conversation will continue, I am sure. We're going to take a short break for a few minutes, and then the next lot of seminars start in 10 minutes time. And those seminars, you can stay on this stream where we're going to be looking at cultural intelligence, just how vital it is for us as pioneers and planters to be able to adapt to different cultural contexts. So do join us if you want to, or you might want to be skipping over to a different stream for one of the rich variety of seminars that are available this afternoon. But thank you so much for being with us, and God bless you in your pioneering. Thank you.